So if so when discomfort or unpleasantness arise, so if you don't put in perspective, so even if it is a tiny discomfort, so it becomes huge. It's like putting, it's like seeing long by itself. If long is by seen by itself, it looks really long. So it is only when we put something longer that it becomes short. And so same when something that we see or we consider short, when we seen by, when it is seen by itself, it looks really short. When we put next to it, next to it, something shorter, then it becomes long. So as we have heard many times, we know, so everything is relative. So everything means the suffering as well, the pain as well, the discomfort as well. So it's relative. So therefore, when one is sitting and experience discomfort, physical discomfort, like during the session, and then when one thinks of bigger suffering, bigger pain that other people experience in this world, so other people experience in this world, then our pain becomes smaller, insignificant. So therefore, how much we can bear, bearable, unbearable, does not depend upon the pain itself, it depends the way we see it. So something being unbearable, feeling unbearable or bearable, does not depend upon the pain itself, the discomfort itself, the unpleasantness itself, but it depends on how we see it. That's something become bearable. So when we feel something unbearable, we think it depends upon the discomfort itself. We think that it depends upon the unpleasant, the pain itself. But if we reflect, if we reflect, think about carefully. So the moment we put, for the intelligent person, the childish-like person is different. But for the intelligent person, the moment one puts a bigger pain next to it, a bigger in the sense when one reflect, think, other human condition, much worse than that, physical pain that one experiences when sitting. So when one put a bigger pain next to it, then it becomes insignificant, becomes bearable. When it is seen by itself, is unbearable. So therefore, pain being bearable or unbearable, so it depends not upon the pain itself, but how we see it. So it is to our ignorance, you know, to our ignorance, it appears as if be bearable or unbearable, it appears as if it comes from the object itself, you know, from the pain itself. So it is, you know, a misperception. You know, when one is sick and one thinks only of one's own sickness, then it becomes unbearable. Then, you know, when the person hears that, oh, other people, you know, other people too in the neighborhood are also sick, you know, other people too in that country have the same sickness, you know, when the person hears this, and is a little bit relieved, he feels better, therefore becomes bearable. So this therefore it shows that it's totally a mental thing, being or not being bearable. So therefore, let's reflect a little bit on this. So then variable, so unbearable, as you have seen, it is purely coming from the mind. So coming from the mind. So the way we look at it, so the way we see it, so therefore we generate the determination, so throughout today's practice, so as much as I can, I will remember this. So whenever I feel, you know, unpleasantness and discomfort and due to the heat or the tiredness or whatever it may be, or the pain when sitting, so immediately recognize it, being aware of it, and know, generate the knowledge that there are much bigger pain in the world than that. Yeah. Immediately recognize and put a bigger thing next to it. There are bigger pain in the world than that. So the moment we do that, so our discomfort, unpleasantness becomes smaller, you know, smaller. So bearable. So we generate, you know, that thought, that determination. So then, in order to eliminate interferences that are beyond, you know, our ability, so one recites the Hatha Sutra. So we recite together. Yeah. Thus I've heard. At one time the Lord was sitting on Vulture's Peak near the city of Rajgir. He was accompanied by a large community of monks as well as a large community of bodhisattvas. On that occasion, the Lord was observed in a particular concentration called the Profound Appearance. Meanwhile, the Bodhisattva, the Great Being, the Noble Avalokiteshvara, was contemplating the profound discipline of the perfection of wisdom. He came to see that the five aggregates were void of any inherent nature of their own. Through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra approached the Noble Avalokiteshvara and asked him, "How should the son of the noble lineage proceed when he wants to train in the profound discipline of the perfection of wisdom?" The Noble Avalokiteshvara replied to the Venerable Shariputra, "Whatever son or daughter of the noble lineage wants to train in the profound discipline of the perfection of wisdom should consider things in the following way. First, he or she should clearly and thoroughly comprehend that the five aggregates are void of any inherent nature of their own. Form is void, but voidness is form. Voidness is no other than forms, and forms are no other than voidness. Similarly, feelings, discernment, formative elements, and consciousness are also void. Likewise, Shariputra, all phenomena void. They have no defining characteristics, they are unproduced, they do not cease, they are undefiled, yet they are not separate from defilement. They do not decrease, yet do not increase. This being the case, Shariputra, in terms of voidness, there exist no forms, no feelings, no discernment, no formative elements, no consciousness, no eyes, no ears, no noses, no tongues, no bodies, no minds, no visual forms, no sounds, no smells, no taste, no tactile sensation, no mental objects. There exists no visual element, no mental element, and no element of mental consciousness. There exists no ignorance and no absorption of ignorance, no aging and death, and no absorption of aging and death. In the same way, there exists no suffering, no original suffering, no cessation, no path, no wisdom, no attainment, and no lack of attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, since Bodhisattva have no attainment, they depend upon and dwell in the perfection of wisdom. Their minds are unobstructed and unafraid. They transcend all error and finally reach the point of nirvana. All the Buddhas of the past, present and future have depended, do and will depend upon the perfection of wisdom. Thereby they became, are becoming, and will become unsurpassably, perfectly and completely awakened Buddhas. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom is a mantra of great knowledge. It is an unsurpassable mantra. It is a mantra that is comparable to the incomparable. It is a mantra that totally pacifies all suffering. It will not deceive you, therefore know it to be true. I proclaim the mantra of the perfection of wisdom. Tayata gate gate paragate parasam gate bodhisoha. Shariputra, it is in this way that the great Bodhisattva trained themselves in the profound perfection of wisdom. At that moment, the Lord arose from his concentration and said to the noble Avalokiteshvara, well said, that is just how it is, my son, just how it is. The profound perfection of wisdom should be practiced exactly as you have explained it. Then the Tathagatas will be truly delighted. When the Lord has spoken these words, the Venerable Shariputra and the Bodhisattva, the Great Being, the Noble Avalokiteshvara, and the entire gathering of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas were overjoyed, and they praised what the Lord has said. And so we make the mind strong, but by making the body strong, so making sure that one is the body is stable, steady, with a erect. So the spine erect, the head neither too bent forward, not backward, but up, you know, in a way that the tip of the nose is in line with the navel. And so the posture itself, it is, you know, a great, you know, effect on the mind. So simply sitting like this, it has a great effect on the mind. So as it means, it signifies, you know, self-confidence. So the body is not bent, therefore the mind is not bent. So self-confidence means the mind is erect. Yeah? Self-confidence means the mind is erect. So therefore when we keep the body erect, the mind too, you know, is also affected. Psychologically, if you like, that's what happened. And yeah. And so we make the body, therefore we make the body and the mind one. So one thing. So how? By generating awareness, mindfulness. So mindfulness of the sitting and then of the breath. So with mindfulness of the breath, we unified, you know, join so the body and the mind, so that the meaning of, you know, yoga means unifying. So the body and the mind become unified. And so how? By letting the breath breathe, so being aware of that, being aware of the breath breathing. So first observing the entire process of the breath coming through the nostril, down the chest, reaches the abdomen. So the abdomen raises or expands. So the breath comes out, the abdomen folds or contracts, and the breath through the chest out again from the nostrils. And then slowly, slowly, focusing only on the abdomen falling, arising, falling. So the awareness of a very simple act, very simple and precise. So it is simple, observing every single aspect of it, you know, long, short, fast, slow, you know, irregular, and so forth. Simple, and is the way we look at it is precise. Know, precise. Therefore, it makes the mind also simple and precise. So the observing of the breath like that, observing the breath breathing is a silent, it's very silent. You know, it's not done with the head, it's not done with the brain, is not done with a concept, you know, is not done with a concept, is awareness. So it is full, it is a totality. You know, it's pervasive. So the moment you feel distracted, so then immediately you generate awareness of the environment. You know, you listen to the silence, the external quietness. And then back again on the breath.
Thank you.